What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another... Oh, I said pay-per-view point. Wow. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another episode of the Smart Count Moment Smack Talk Podcast. It's time for us to do another edition of Superstar Scores. But before we get into that, let me introduce who is doing those scorings. That's a word, right? Scorings? It is today, at the very least. I'm your host, as always, Tony Mango. Joining me, as always, are Robert DeFelice.
Hey, hey.
Callum Wiggins.
Hello there.
And Steven Wago.
Don't call it a comeback. I might flake out yet.
you're 2-2 at this point. No, 2-0. Oh, that's what it is. Math, scores. I know, lots of numbers going around this edition.
You might get a streak going.
Maybe.
Hey.
I get that reference. Look at that. Captain America. Yeah, what we're doing today is another edition of Superstar Scores. This is entry number 26, the 25th one. The most recent one that we did a few months ago was a points adjustment where we went back and we looked at all the different ones that we've had in the past from Shawn Michaels through Edge, and I adjusted my own points. That's kind of what the whole points adjustment is. And Callum and Rob had given their full breakdowns for the ones that they weren't here for in the past, and we figured out the average for everything. We sorted out all that other kind of stuff, and we ended up with a breakdown that ends up being where my number one at the moment, for my benchmark at the very least, is Chris Jericho. He has a score of an 86, and tied for the number two for me are both Shawn Michaels and Triple H at 85. Callum was, I think, around the same range. He has Triple H and Chris Jericho tied at number one at 89, so a little bit higher than mine, and Shawn Michaels at 85, and some other people around the... Actually, no, 86 is Daniel Bryan. That's your number two, and Michaels is number three, and Rob has a 90 for Daniel Bryan at number one.
No, it's a 90 for Jericho.
Yeah, looking at that. Yeah, Chris Jericho is a 90. His Daniel Bryan is 85, who is around his number three ranking or so.
Tied for three with a few people, and I think Triple H is at number two with an 88.
An 88, yeah. So it's kind of, we're all in the same range of, like, an 84 is pretty much like our bronze medal, 85, 86 is our silver medal, and 80. 788, that kind of thing, around that range, around a 90 is the highest that we've gotten right now. I'm pretty sure, double checking about that again. Yeah, the highest that anybody has for a ranking is Jericho at 90 for Rob. Now, Wago has not gone through and done all this in the past. He's been a part of some other editions, like I'm pretty sure Michaels, Foley, Bob Holly, RVD, probably Triple H, maybe Ultimate Warrior. If you were to look at this full on list, we have, I can send you a list real quick of all the people that we've done in the past. Who do you think that you probably would have at number one now that you have a whole bunch of options that are available? I'm assuming that you probably would put number one with Brock Lesnar.
If you sent me the list on Facebook, if you sent me the list on Skype,
Facebook.
Okay. Yeah, I'd probably put Brock in number one and Sean coming in second.
And then probably number three, Alberto Del Rio, or Shane McMahon. So our averages are figured out. I think that I might even have some kind of a link on the points adjustment thing for people to be able to see like the full breakdown or something. I'm not entirely sure, but you don't need to do that. If you want to go back and check out what we've done in the past, then go back and check out that previous one. But right now we're going to do the breakdown for The Undertaker. And this is mostly because he has been heavily implying and stating outright that he is retired. Now, in the Last Ride documentary, he says that, but he also says, but if Vince McMahon were to call, who knows? And we've seen multiple different retirements in the past for The Undertaker. Technically speaking, the character has died multiple times as well and come back. So you can never really trust the idea that The Undertaker is officially done. There's part of me that hopes that that's true. There's part of me that hopes that that's not true at all. And he is my second favorite of all time. So you can fully expect some high points here. And we are going to act as if he is retired. He might do stuff in the future, and that might influence things. And if it does, then, you know, obviously we'll do some kind of another adjustment. And, you know, we'll kind of approach it like that. But at the very least, his career is 30 years in the making, and we have a lot that we can look back on. Whereas somebody like Paige, she was only a few years, so that was a completely different setup. And I will give you a full breakdown of what the Superstar Scores categories are and how this all works in a moment. But I want to remind everybody that this isn't just about our scores. This is also about your side of the two-way street. And if we are doing our kind of breakdown, we want to know what you have to say, not only about what our scores are, but what your scores would be. So if we think something and you disagree, if you think that we should have gone higher or lower, drop it in the comments below. And as I mention all the time, if you are listening to us on a podcast platform that does not have a comment section to it, like Stitcher or Spotify or Apple Podcasts or something, then leave some kind of a star rating or a favorite or a follow or a heart or a like or whatever they have on those kind of things. That helps out quite a bit. And then hop on over to either the page on smartcatmoment.com or the Twitter account. You can tweet at smartcatmoment with your scores, or you can post something on the facebook.com/smartcatmoment, or the best of all things, go to the YouTube channel, hit that like button on the video, subscribe to the channel if you haven't done that already, ring that little notification bell to be aware of when new videos go up, as well as when we go live for things like the quarter three mailbag. Stay tuned for a dark cast, by the way, on the quarter three predictions for heel and face turns and the future endeavors forecast and things like that. But yeah, drop a comment, tell us your thoughts on these kind of things, and keep the discussion going. Long-winded way to introduce the whole setup, but here is the introduction for what Superstar Scores actually is for those who have not checked out 25 editions in the past. It is 10 categories. They're broken into these five umbrella categories kind of things, and you can rate somebody on a 0 to 10 scale per category. The goal is to reach a perfect 100. Nobody has done that, of course, in the past. As I mentioned before, 90 is the highest. And we're going to try to do that today. We're going to give a full career assessment of The Undertaker from ring skills, mic skills, appearance, behavior, and crowd reaction. So let's just start diving into this. The ring skills are two categories of athleticism and psychology. Athleticism is their signature moveset, their finisher. Do they botch often, or can they wrestle without having to botch? Can they do a wide variety of moves, et cetera, et cetera? And psychology is the storytelling aspect of that. Is the storytelling good on their regular matches? Do they have the ability to make you believe in them? Do they sell their injuries? Do they have long matches without being boring? All that other kind of stuff. And I have given The Undertaker an 8 for athleticism. Let's start there. Because this guy, as tall as he is, and if you're, of course, judging him in his prime, not compared to now, where it's harder for him to move around with, you know, hip replacements and stuff like that, he has been able to do pretty much everything. He can wrestle. Now, he's not going to wrestle as good as, like, a Bret Hart or a Kurt Angle, but he can wrestle, like, the technical side of things. He has stamina when he's fighting smaller people like Shawn Michaels or so. So it's not just the lumbering punches type of matches like that he has with the Great Khali. He can brawl with the best of them. He can fly over the top rope, like a cruiserweight sometimes can. That's more impressive, being his size. He walks the ropes, and he doesn't fall. He only ever falls if it ends up being that somebody pulls him down, which is part of the storytelling side of things and stuff. So I could be persuaded to go up another point, maybe even 2, but I'm going to go with an 8. Who wants to go next?
I'll chime in. So I'm actually going lower with a 7 because I have to take into the span of his whole career. You got to look in the 90s when he was a bit of a chunky boy and he wasn't moving as fast. He got a little tubby in the Attitude Era. And then you got to take into the account when his bones got brittle and he's just not moving the same way that he is. If we're talking about prime Undertaker, 8, maybe 9, especially when he was able to make some of those big leaps. But over the entire span of his career, falls on a 7 for me.
So I've got an 8 currently at the moment. I agree with the idea of, like, the whole span of his career. You have to look at, there's very different periods of Undertaker's in-ring work, because the period from, like, the early 90s is very him just standing around, taking punches, like taking a few moves, no selling, getting back up and then just doing his thing. Very stoic, very boring to watch, really, if unless you like, we'll talk, obviously talk about psychology, which kind of makes up for that side of things at that point in his career. But if it was just purely athleticism, he didn't have any sort of in-ring charisma or psychology, then it would just be a guy plodding around the ring. And then you take in his more recent stuff, I'd say anywhere post the match with CM Punk, it's more misses than hits. So that knocks him down a little bit. At his peak, which I would say is anywhere between around about 2006 and 2010, 11-ish, around about that range, it's just banger match after banger match. And he's learned all that, got all that experience that he's accrued from the years that he's been performing, but he's mixing up with the high-flying stuff. He can still walk the ropes. He can still do all that great stuff. His signature moveset is iconic in every single extent of the word. The choke slam, the tombstone pole driver, the last ride. He mixes it up with submissions, with the dragon sleeper and the Hell's Gate stuff. So, yeah, I think 8 is a good place to be, but the stuff that he's done at the back tail end of his career and at the start of his career kind of lessen it a bit. I also think that because he's had so many stinker matches with people who are considering like bad wrestlers, who a better technical wrestler like a Shawn Michaels or a Daniel Bryan would be able to get more out of than he could, that would also knock him down a little bit. So I think 8 is a good number for me.
I also have him at an 8. I think, yes, you do need to take into account his whole career, but if you look at the early days of his career when he was in the ring with guys like Adam Bomb and Mabel, he's still one of the most athletic people on the roster at the time, even though he wasn't a Shawn or a Brett. And then as he went on, he just added more to his repertoire. He started doing topes in matches with Kane, and he started, you know, to add the Hell's Gate and the Dragon Sleeper, like Callum said. I just think Undertaker, I can't put him too far down the list when he's been so available and consistent for so long.
All right. I'm going to try to keep track of this a little bit in our own little brackets and stuff like that. Let me make sure that I have this in there the way that it should be. So let me just for a breakdown of all that again and a little bit of a recap. I had given him an 8. And Callum, what did you give him?
8.
And Rob was also an 8?
8, yeah.
And Wigger was a 7?
Yep. Good part of that Attitude Era. That Undertaker's matches were the part you skipped.
Oh, that's the that's the point where I'm going to start being harsh on his physique. So we'll get to that point.
Yeah, so right now, I mean, we're like all kind of in the same range, but let's keep that going here with the psychology side of things, because that's obviously something that's a different part of this mix. I think that he is even stronger in that regard. Obviously, the Undertaker's gimmick is like the most prominent thing that he has, and you know, you come in as like this zombie creature and you get it with the way that he wrestles. You know, he doesn't just like walk to the ring and play this part and then wrestles like a normal guy where he's, you know, he strips off all the gear and he's wearing trunks and he's just doing drop kicks and hurricanranas and everything like that. He has been doing the whole thing like when he sits up in his matches where it's just like, you know, he's not going to die and everything like that. And when he switched over to the biker character, which I'm not a fan of, but he still had this like mystique to him from what I've seen. And that became different as far as like he commanded a different type of respect and he switched it up where he could wrestle a different type of style and you could still buy into it without having to just rely on the same stuff. So I feel like he's got both sides of that very well, and he doesn't look weak in the process, but he also lets people beat him up. It's not just that he stands there and takes the punishment and literally never sells for anything or something like that. Undertaker matches, unless they're like against, you know, Giant Gonzalez or something like that, kind of the longer they are, the better. like, you know, against Edge or Batista or Shawn Michaels or Triple H. Like, you put him against somebody who can really work and really understand psychology, it's 10 times better. You put him up against somebody who doesn't understand psychology, he could at least get the point across. You know, if he's wrestling, you know, we mentioned Mabel all the time. If he's wrestling Mabel and Mabel's not the most adept storyteller out of the roster, he could at least tell the story of, this guy's a big dude and I'm struggling, but I'm still the Undertaker. So I'm giving him a 10.
I give him a 10 here as well. I think Undertaker is probably the best at storytelling that there's ever been in WWE. For the early part of his career, the psychology was simple. I don't sell anything. And then once he turned babyface and was allowed to get beat up by guys like Gonzalez and Mabel, it became, I can get hurt, but I'm still this mythical creature and I will come back and win the match. And then, you know, you translate that into the American Badass, where he became the conscience of the WWF and everything became, well, you have to beat me and to prove your point here. And then he rounds that out nicely at the end of his career when he goes back to being the dead man and everything becomes about the streak and about holding on to that last, you know, bit of legacy that he has. And it just, it always works with Taker, and I think he's the perfect storyteller. And I give him a 10.
I'll go with giving him a 10 as well, just around, like, keep it on the same trajectory. I don't think you can wrestle at the level that he's wrestled at for as long as he has without being a 10 at this point, or at least like a 9 at the very least. But his matches, especially in the early part of his career where it was just him stalking around the ring a lot and not doing anything particularly athletic or spectacular, where the storytelling had to be on point in order for him to get a reaction, and he did get a reaction. And it's just, there's so many signature Undertaker spots in matches which are outside of the ring side of it, like the big sit-up spot, or the when someone punches him in the face and he just stares at them repeatedly, or like stares daggers into them. I always remember the big laughing spot with Brock Lesnar in their match at SummerSlam is like the ultimate Undertaker, the ultimate gif-able Undertaker spot. And it's just those little moments that elevate a match to a further level. Like the match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25 that everyone talks about is like one of the greatest matches in WrestleMania history, is built on the storytelling aspect of it. Because neither of those two have the most diverse moveset in the world. It's not like Michaels usually seems to get away with just wrestling using like less than 10 moves in a match and a lot of punching and flying around. But that's the beauty of it, is that by telling a story and actually weaving it through the emotions of the match and the facial expressions and everything along those lines, it creates a match which people who do 50, 100 moves in a match just can't reach that sort of level. And over the years, Undertaker's done that with so many people and performed in so many great matches and delivered so many things, especially on WrestleMania stages, that I think 10 is only appropriate for somebody like that. So, yeah, sticking with the maximum for him for that.
Man, I can tell some of you fuckers never had to sat for a 90s Undertaker match in like late 90s. Him on Raw was not a good sight. Him on a lot of pay-per-views was not a good sight. On his best night, that dude's a 20, but I have to give him a 9 altogether because, fuck me, late 90s, early 2000s, watching some of his stuff was rough. Like, no one understands his character more than him, but god damn, he went through a period where he lost himself.
So you're going to 9?
Yeah, 9. Like, it would be, if, see, even the early part of his career was way better than that period. He understood his character more, he sold for who he should sell for, but during that late 90s period, I can see why he changed up his character.
So we're still all around the same range. We'll see if that switches here and there, but yeah, that's a quick breakdown, I guess, so to speak, of how the rest of this is going to go. So a little reminder again, drop a comment below, tell us what your scores are throughout this whole thing. Kind of, I'll give you the full breakdown of course at the end. We're not going to have you get out your calculators and remember this kind of stuff or whatever. Let's go to the mic skills side of things. Obviously, this is the more verbal side of the performance rather than the in-ring stuff. This is broken down into charisma and character. The charisma side is their ability to speak promos without stuttering and to stay fresh. Are they doing things that are entertaining more so than anything else? To not kind of bury the lead a little bit, but like a 10 for me would be like The Rock, and somebody who does not cut promos at all, or when they do, it's just kind of a mess, like maybe like a Sin Cara or something like that, just from the language barrier. They are on the lower side of things. And we didn't really talk about what our lows were as far as our scores, just to give it somebody like the range. At the very least, the lowest thing that I had given anybody at this point for anything, I have a couple of twos. I never gave anybody a one, and I never gave anybody a zero. But the twos were like, for instance, Buff Bagwell on public relations and backstage, and Alberto Del Rio on backstage professionalism and public relations type stuff and whatever. So that's a range on that. My absolute lowest for a total for everybody was Buff Bagwell. And Callum was just a little bit above Buff Bagwell on that, but he has Steve Blackman at a 50. My lowest is 46 for Buff Bagwell, and Rob's lowest was a 47 for Buff Bagwell. So
yes,
we're working with the idea that that is the low mark. You know, not many ones or twos or anything like that. We're going to do lots of high marks on this kind of stuff, though, because for me, and I, people might think that I'm a little bit high on this, but charisma for The Undertaker, 9. I can't give him a 10 because he is not The Rock. He is not a Ric Flair. But for the what he's supposed to be doing, the charisma is there. You know, his character is not going to cut that same type of promo. He's not going to be like, well, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. Like, you know, he is there to cut this droning dead man voice thing. And it could be so boring if it was delivered from somebody who isn't The Undertaker. Yet he takes monotone and droll and low, and he makes it something where people hinge on every word that he says. You know, yeah, he's had some stinker promos in the past, and he's had some amazing ones and stuff, but if you look at the bulk of his career and you look at him in his prime and all that other kind of stuff, I'm going to go with a 9. I think that he deserves that boost for that.
I also have him at a 9. I think Undertaker's promos, especially in the beginning and the latter half of his career, were really, really good stuff. I'm not a fan of the American Badass. Otherwise, I'd probably give him a 10. I was not a fan of his, like, you know, on the big hoss in town type stuff from that era. But all in all, Undertaker's cut several of my favorite promos, you know, the one after he loses to Yoko and he's being, I guess, lifted up to heaven. That's always a fun Undertaker promo. You know, the stuff he's done over the years with Kane. I just think he's very good at what he does.
So this is where I'm going to start diverging a little bit with, because I'm in between a 6 and a 7 right now. I probably will lean towards 7, but in the same way, Vega remembers a lot of terrible stuff that he did in the 90s in ringside. I remember a lot of early 2000 Undertaker promos, and God damn, that guy was insufferable on the microphone. Absolutely insufferable. It was, and a lot of it was down to the content that he was saying as much as like the actual delivery of it as well. But it really, really irked me. Like, it made me, it's why I don't share the same sort of love for The Undertaker that Rob and Tony, you have when we discuss him. He's never been in my top 10, and that's due to his character, to elements of that character and his mic skills. It just never warmed to it at all. And in his early days, he had a mouthpiece do most of his talking for him. He came in with like the little lines every now and again, but there was a reason why he had a mouthpiece, because the nature of his character and also the fact that he wasn't particularly good at that. And I don't think he's ever got to, not right now, he's at his peak in terms of the stuff that he does deliver on the mic, which is elevated by the fact that nobody else can cut a decent promo anyway. So it's elevated when somebody who clearly isn't being scripted and clearly is being given free rein on what he's allowed to say. He is allowed to deliver what he wants. And yeah, so he's currently at his peak, but there are a lot of bumpy promos along the way that I think means that I'm going to keep it at 7 at this point.
See, I'm debating on it. I was at an 8, but you've raised up some really good points, and I'm tempted to drop him to a 7. See, The Undertaker's American Badass character was really rocky during those first years, especially when his only line was, "I'll make you famous." It just wasn't a good catchphrase. It never got over for me. Yeah, I think I'm going to drop him down to a 7. He was really shaky during that period. Like, as far as character goes, he's great, but natural charisma, when he's outside of that dead man character, is really rough. When he's inside the dead man character, when he's cutting those slow, methodical promos, he's like a 9, but overall, he's probably a 7.
Well, you bring up character, and that's the next one of the mic skills. I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory. It's their gimmick, you know, it's overall their whole gimmick, as far as how they present that on the mic and everything like that. And another factor with this is, are they good at being a heel and a face, or are they kind of just pigeonholed in one kind of thing and all that? And I don't think I really need to explain this. I think that we're all kind of going to, we should all agree on this one. Gimmick-wise, Undertaker's a friggin' 10.
He is in my book, at least. He's perfect.
The best...
He is the standard bearer for Evolution in wrestling. I don't know how else to say this. He's a 10.
I will definitively say Undertaker is what I consider the best character in pro wrestling history. So this is the benchmark for me as far as character goes.
You see, I didn't dislike the American Badass gimmick. I only disliked one portion of the American Badass gimmick. So I have to go with a 10 for him.
See, I did seriously dislike the American Badass gimmick. And I agree with you guys saying that the Undertaker gimmick, which is the Undertaker gimmick, which is the early 90s to the mid-Attitude Era, and then from 2004 onwards, is the definitive character. It's the character that really resonates with people. It's a character that's going to survive for decades or centuries after he's gone, maybe even. But I
think the world's going to last centuries.
But I just feel like the American Badass character for me was just such a huge step in the wrong direction. And maybe he needed that change of direction just to revitalize the character when it came back. So I'm not saying it was a bad thing that happened. I'm just saying if he did have to change it up, he might as well have changed it up to something good. And he didn't, in my eyes. So that's why I'm going to put him down to a 9. Just because that character is such a low ebb. If his whole career was that American Badass character, it would be like a 3 or 4.
Yeah, it would be low. I mean, so I've said this before. I stopped watching wrestling in around 2000, like the early 2000. I honestly don't remember if I watched around the Royal Rumble of 2000 even. I've watched it back in past, but like one of the main reasons why I stopped watching wrestling was I had gotten out of it, and you know, it was just one of those things where it's like, well, my ritual of every Monday night watching wrestling is just sort of like, nah, I'm not going to watch it this week. I'll watch it next week, maybe, that kind of thing or whatever. But eventually, at one point, a friend of mine that was still watching was like, hey, did you see what they did with The Undertaker? He's a biker now. And I was like, you know what? I'm done. Like, you can't take my favorite character, make him a biker, and make me think that that's worth watching ever again. And then it took until 2006 for me to get back to it. So he had already been back to being The Undertaker at that point. So I skipped over the American Badass, and all that's been in retrospect for me.
You can't really say you disliked it. You never lived through it.
I never lived through it, but I've gone back, and I've been like, oh, wow, yeah, I would have hated that. Like, that is not The Undertaker to me. So, yeah.
So what about the hybrid character, like that he is now? I wouldn't be against him being that.
I actually like that. That's something that I think factors into me giving him a 10, is because he took a character that was great, and he switched it up, tried to be just himself. It's not my thing. But admittedly, yeah, it's not the best character, but it's not the worst either. It's just a guy. who's a biker. There's been plenty of biker dudes before that have been worse. I mean, there's plenty afterward too, like Chuck Palumbo. I'd rather watch an Undertaker American Badass thing than a Chuck Palumbo thing. So that's not the worst. It's not like his character is like a Hervina or something like that. But then he figured out a way to mash the two together in a believable way where he could do things where he's more human, but you could still go, yeah, I'll buy into the idea that he's summoning lightning from the heavens and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think a little bit of downtime with a bad character is more than forgivable considering how great all the other iterations of that character was. Cause he's been Minister of Darkness. He's been, I mean, I looked at the nicknames ahead of time. These are just literally just some of his nicknames: the Dead Man, the Phenom, the Grim Reaper, the Minister of Darkness, the Big Dog of the Yard, the American Badass, Big Evil, the Gunslinger, the Demon of Death Valley, the Last Outlaw, the Man Who Cannot Be Destroyed. You don't get that many nicknames without having character. And you don't last 30 years and still be so beloved without being like that. So to me, I'm like, yeah, he had a hiccup. But you know what? Triple H used to dab his face with a napkin on the way to the ring. And he did the whole Katie Vick thing. And Shawn Michaels has been some crappy characters in the past. And Chris Jericho has been some problematic characters. And, you know?
I mean, yeah, like, Undertaker can never really go back to the lowest point into his career, where he wore snake skin pants. That was probably the worst incarnation of the character.
It's like I was saying, like, I don't disagree with the assumption that him transitioning into the American Badass character was actually a negative. It was so bad, it made people want that dead man's return so badly that it probably sustained his career another 10, 15 years longer than it would have been. Because if you are just the same character for 20, 30 years, it is going to get stale at some point. You do need to freshen it up, even if that fresh up is actually just piling a load of manure on top of a previously great character.
I don't think it's fair to say that it was bad and that's why people wanted it back. Undertaker was still getting massive reactions and the gimmick was over as hell, but it's like anything. You take something away, the nostalgia factor is going to creep in.
So yeah, I kind of go with the idea that the reason why he was getting such a big reaction was because there was nobody else to react to beyond the fact that more than the Undertaker's character itself was big. It's just, oh, that's the guy that we recognize among the faces of around about 2002 and 2003 when they were resetting everything and all the big stars had gone. So, well,
wasn't that like firmly like you got Eddie, you got Angle, you got...
Yeah, but those were guys that like, you know, wrestling fans really liked. It wasn't the people who, the casuals that tuned in during the Attitude Era and then fled off in their droves was going to connect with. The Undertaker was someone who I think did connect with those people a bit more, which is a good thing. But it's to be fair, it didn't prevent loads of him. His character didn't do anything to stave off the hemorrhage of fans that were happening during the early Ruthless Aggression era.
I imagine that there's somebody in the crowd at that time that was just sort of like, ugh. Eddie Guerrero and Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. Where's Flash Funk?
You would have been that person, Tony. That would have been you. But I think, as you said, you know, you got back into it knowing that DX was back and Taker was Taker again. So maybe, you know, that little hiccup really did help him find more longevity.
What if Undertaker would have had a hiccup character like Natty had the whole farting thing?
Well, just thank God he wasn't the Eggman.
Yeah. You want to make me Eggman? Whatever. Booger Red is also a nickname that Jim Ross for some reason tried to get over. How the hell do you think that would work?
Because I guess he's the boogeyman and he has got red hair. I think that was how JR described that one. But yeah, it didn't work and for good reason.
That's fresh.
Short red-haired Undertaker.
Mean Mark Callis is not factored into the character work in WWE and all that stuff.
Well, that's a good point. Are we bringing up Mean Mark Callis when we talk about his character? Because that's part of it.
That would elevate it for me if that was the case.
What was the tag team that he was part of? The Skyscrapers?
Yeah, him and... what was his name?
Dan Tiger.
I know he was with Papa Shango for a while.
It was Dance Bivy. It was a
Dance Bivy, the original Bray Wyatt character.
I just had a flashback to Papa Shango, Papa Shango, Papa Shango. Oh man, Papa Shango doesn't get brought up enough. Eventually, we're gonna do Superstar Scores Papa Shango or something like that. Actually, well, that would be
According to Wade Barrett, he's gonna be in the Royal Rumble soon.
So yeah, that's true. What would we do? This is a random side thing like that. What would we do with Superstar Scores? Where if it would be like The Godfather, would we do like Papa Shango? Because do we judge based off of just the guy himself, or do we? Because that's
You'd have to do the whole career because he's had multiple characters. He also played
Kama.
The
Godfather is one character, technically speaking, because they never really gave the Godfather another name. He was basically supposed to be Kama becomes the Godfather, but Papa Shango, they act like it's completely different.
Was there actually a point where Kama turned into the Godfather, or did he just show up as the Godfather 1 week?
Well, I think they were just doing something where, I think he became the Godfather while still part of the Nation of Domination. So he just came out. They came out like the Godfather, Kama, Mustafa, or something along those lines. And then he just transitioned in. It just became a bit more flamboyant because I think he was still a Godfather. Well, he was still dressed like head to toe in black, that sort of. Still in that serious character.
That'd be an interesting one to do in the future. I don't know.
With like Mick Foley, it wouldn't be a Superstar Scores on Papa Shango. It'd be a Superstar Scores on Charles Wright.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Foley, he's had the different characters, but they also made it a point to say they're all the same. They never really did that with Papa Shango and whatever. Just same as like, well, I mean, technically, I guess speaking, if we're talking Undertaker now, they do call him Mark Calloway. So.
Yeah, which is really weird, but yeah.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, maybe if you have a point of contention, bring it up in the comments. And if you want us to do, by the way, Superstar Scores, Papa Shango / Godfather / Kama Mustafa, Spring Fighting Machine, whatever it is, then the best way to make sure that we do that is to hit up the Patreon, because the Patreon has a Pick Your Poison tier where you can request some kind of a special feature. And if, you know, we haven't done a podcast of some kind of topic that you really want, or you want us to do some kind of an editorial on the website or something like that, then Pick Your Poison is where you say, hey, this. And I go, all right, that's how it pretty much works. And even a dollar goes a long way to make a big difference as far as keeping the lights on here and just keeping things running along. $5 is an ad block forgiveness thing. $10 gives you access to the Darkcast Patreon exclusive episodes. I mentioned before, we're going to do one of those pretty soon. There's mailbag priority for the months that we are not doing the quarterly mailbags, and so on and so forth. So if you got the spare change and you want to toss some our way, then go to patreon.com/smartcatmoment. By the way, while I'm at it, I'll just toss out a couple more plugs. Another way for you to help out on the monetary side of things is the merchandise shop, TeePublic and Redbubble. You can pick up masks, which you should be wearing these days, and t-shirts and other types of different products that are with all the different merchandise designs. TeePublic and Redbubble have shops for A Mango Tees, Fanboys Anonymous, and Smartcat Moment, so there's plenty of different options there. If you don't know what Fanboys Anonymous is, it is the geek culture website where I will do my movie reviews whenever movies come back and some other kinds of things on the geek culture spectrum, like TV shows and comic books and video games. I'm really, really desperately wanting to do Mount Rushmore of Batman villains. Like, I got to find the time to do it. And if you want to make sure I do that, you want to make sure that Rob, for instance, and I get on some podcast and talk for like an hour about like the Batman villains, Mount Rushmore, or Spider-Man villains, best of them all time, or whatever it is, I don't know, then head up to Patreon for that too, patreon.com/fanboysanonymous. Show more support for that. I'll find the time to do more fanboy stuff.
Smart God Moment, the best way to spend your PUA.
I don't know what PUA stands for. Why am I having a brain fart?
The assistance that everyone's on right now because of COVID.
It's because we're in America, so theirs is called PUA.
Oh, maybe it's just the fact that I never got any money. That's
well, there's that too. You and I didn't get that.
Fuck you. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Superstar Scores COVID era. Fucking zero. it's not good. A lot of character work, though. It's
the Chris Benoit equivalent of Superstar Scores.
We should do a Chris Benoit Superstar Scores at some point too. If you want us to do that, patreon.com/smartcatmoment. There you go.
I'm going to say that is the only one where we're going to get into negative numbers for the public relations.
Yeah,
that's true.
PR is going to be zero. Backstage professionalism. There's a time you fucking watch people have sex in a closet. There's some weird ones.
That would be one of those weird benchmark type of things where we're like, it's a negative whatever, it's a negative whatever. That's a 9 for this, like, you know, that kind of thing. Like,
and the longer we've gotten distant from the incident, like, the worse the stories about him have gotten too. Oof.
Yeah, so that's something to possibly look out for in the future. I don't know.
Hey, anyway,
yeah, let's move over to appearance. We've got physique and entrance. They are pretty self-explanatory. Physique is their actual body shape. And it should be clarified, and I mentioned this on the website, and I think I mention it when we do these, but if I don't, then, hey, I should have in the past. Physique doesn't necessarily have to mean that every single person is absolutely sculpted. For instance, I have John Morrison as my example of somebody who is pretty much like a perfect 10 in a lot of ways. And like a Randy Orton, really high up there, and like a Brock Lesnar type. He doesn't have the same body shape as a John Morrison does, but for what he is doing, it works with his gimmick. You know, Brock Lesnar is not some 8-pack Tony Nese type of guy, but you look at him and you go, oh yeah, he can beat the crap out of people, and I believe it. And then you look at people who are cruiserweights, and yeah, they're not tall and whatever like that a lot of the times, but hey, they've got a great physique to them. And for a cruiserweight with the weight limit type of thing, they're high up, you know, and somebody who isn't, they're low. If you get a Mabel or a Vader type or whatever like that, yeah, they're pretty out of shape as far as just being heavy, but maybe their gimmick is that they're out of shape. I don't know. Like, you know, you have to factor in their gimmick along with that. So I am going with an 8 for Undertaker for physique. He has had times where he's been pretty frail over the years, but I mean, when he's frail, I still look at him and I go, wow, he can kick my ass. And he's had times where he's been on the heavier side, which it didn't really hinder him all that much. I mean, it didn't take away from the idea that he was this, like, you know, demon wizard type of thing. But at his best, he had muscle to him, he has height to him, an imposing figure. You know, he's one of those big men that it doesn't get in the way, where he's not a big guy who can't move and stuff. So I'm going to go with an 8.
All right, I'll jump in. I gave him a 7. I think he's been pretty consistent at looking what he needs to look like for his character. But you got to knock him down a few points for the times that he's come in looking like shit. Obviously, he had his chunky stage in the 90s. And he's had it rough as he's tried to wind down his career recently.
Yeah, I was going to go for a 7 as well. When he has to look like... Even in the early stages where he looked like the Undertaker, he came across as like a real... like a walking corpse, essentially. And I feel like around about... the 2004 to like 2007-08 range, his physique was probably as good as it ever got. And he did, once he dyed the hair and started doing like the makeup that wasn't overbearing, and I mean not like the teardrop in the eye tattoo thing, just terrible, that was like the peak of what he looked like. But there have been many instances where his appearance just gone down significantly. Obviously now he looks pretty frail. There was the WrestleMania 30 look was atrocious, that mohawk and the, like, just looking so old and haggard. And there's obviously the return in 2000 where he had this long ginger mullet, and then he cut it down to be a short ginger look as well. And they didn't really fit with his character because we were so used to the dark-haired Undertaker. And he came back, especially when he came back, I think in 2000, he was markedly overweight as well. So I mark him down for those ones as well. The height is obviously an advantage for him, but I think that there were a lot more people on the roster at any point in time when he's been in the company that have had better physiques than him.
Yeah, I also gave him a 7. Like these guys have said, you know, there's just periods of his career where he just does not look great. I would also throw in the WrestleMania 33 match where he just looks lost and overweight and not present. So 7, because his look has been great for the majority of his career, but there have been points where you have to call it out.
You know, you guys have persuaded me to dock him a point. I'm going to go 7 as well, because, yeah, I forgot about some of those other moments. I kind of have just sort of been like, well, those don't count because he's Undertaker, that kind of thing. But it's true. I should take a point away from that. Let me adjust my score so I don't forget to do that in the future.
Which, I forgot about the this is the point where you brought up those snakeskin pants as well.
As far as hairstyles go, I really hated when he was trying to grow his hair back out and he had like this
weird
mom cut kind of thing going on. That was not good. But then again, you know, he's had worse. Entrance is the other part of the appearance side of things. This factors everything in for the entrance. The music, the pyro, whatever actions they do, it's a 10. I don't need to explain it. It's the best entrance that's ever happened.
Undertaker is the benchmark for entrances, 10. End of story.
Undertaker's entrance is the only one that still gives me chills. Like, it takes me back to being a kid when I hear the Undertaker's music. It's one of the few things that I still hold dear in pro wrestling. It could be a 20.
Yeah, I can't deny the fact that even if there were like a few examples where the entrance just was underwhelming, he gets completely stomped over by how many incredible entrances he's had, especially at WrestleMania and other big events. I even would say that was the best part of the American Badass character, was the motorcycle down to the ring. Like, at least that part was unique. No one else was doing that sort of entrance. And the music is iconic. In terms of like entrance music, I'm a big fan of the Ministry Undertaker theme as well. I think that one is probably the best version of that theme. But yeah, there's an absolute 10. It should be higher, but that's our limit for this one.
Like, I legitimately had given a lot of thought to giving him a higher than a 10. Like, I was just kind of like, maybe there's an exception because the music is so good. Like, yeah, 7 stars. Like, the music is amazing. And he's had some different versions. The Ministry one where it's got the guitar in there and stuff is pretty badass. And you've got, like, they even can take his theme, that funeral march, and make it sad for like video packages and stuff like that. And that's just so, it's so fitting. And everybody mentions that they're
totally
standing
like
in the ring.
The Scrubs verse. It's like the Scrubs thing. They totally have a sad version.
It does. And like, people, Jericho, I think, was one of the most recent ones that just said, like, you know, yeah, every time that you're in the ring with the Undertaker, you basically just like shit yourselves because you're just like, ah, it's the Undertaker when he's coming out of the ring. Like, it's so good. And the pyro has been all these different things, you know, they've given him fireballs where, I mean, the dude's awesome. He gets a fireball all over his body and just goes like, motherfucker, and throws his hat and his coat down and pours some water on himself and wrestles in an elimination chamber. Like, how tough can you be? But like, he's got lightning. He's got like these thunderstorm effects that are going on. The lighting itself is all over the place. He raises his hands and the light goes up or goes down. He pops up out of the middle of nowhere where he doesn't need an entrance. It's just gong. And you're just like, oh shit. And all that. Like, I might be willing to break the scale and be like, you know what? Let's give him a 10 plus and just be like, yeah, this is a plus plus kind of thing. Cause nobody is going to have a better entrance than the Undertaker. And yeah, I don't like the biker thing, but a lot of people do like the biker stuff. And out of all the people who have done the biker gimmick, Undertaker is the coolest when it comes to that. They like the whole Limp Bizkit thing. To me, I'm not a big fan, but
I still remember that WrestleMania 19 entrance. That was like one of my favorite pay-per-views. So I can recall Limp Bizkit playing him down to the ring. Just think, this doesn't fit, but I'm kind of okay with it.
For the error and stuff, it seems like it works.
Yeah, I would have felt better if he hit Fred Durst though.
Yeah, that would have been good. what do you guys kind of think is like the definitive Undertaker entrance? Like the one that really like resonates with you.
I really liked, I don't remember the specifics about some different ones in the past and stuff like that, but I know that one of the only things that I really genuinely enjoyed at WrestleMania 29 when I went, certainly wasn't the food, certainly wasn't like the matches and stuff, but Undertaker's entrance there where he had like the hands coming up from the like from the ground was really cool. But he had some really good stuff on like the Saudi shows too.
I think if I was going to name one, it would be WrestleMania 27 with the Johnny Cash in the background as he's walking to the ring with the fire for the Triple H match.
I just been looking up Undertaker entrances, and I just found this one where he came down to the ring as a bat. What the fuck?
So that was Madison Square Garden. That was Survivor Series 1996. And, yeah.
When that happened, stupid. I just had the Batman da-da-da-da-da in my
I was with Tony with the 29 one. I just like the visual of him going through, like, just crawling through the corpses and, like, the people grabbing at him, like, all the souls that he'd reaped to WrestleMania. But I also have a soft spot for the WrestleMania 14 one, just because it's very, like, there's no amazing special effects or anything like that, but it's very visceral and still looks spectacular.
Oh, and he's got the druids, too. Yeah. Like, I love when they do the entrance where they've got that, like, Gregorian chant type of thing, and then it ends, it transitions over with the gong, and then he walks so slow to the ring, and people make jokes about, like, both him and Randy Orton, where it's like, oh my god, the entrance takes longer than the match sometimes, but, like, the entrance is arguably some of the coolest parts about that. Like, you can do a 25-minute entrance for The Undertaker, and the fans are going to cheer the entire time. Just sitting there like, whoa, Undertaker, woo, 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 for 25 minutes straight.
Undertaker can have a 5-minute match after that. Frankly, it doesn't matter. The entrance is just as important. And I just got reminded of WrestleMania 20 when Paul Bearer was shooting the light out of the fucking urn. That was pretty dope.
Oh, the whole, like, you know...
resurrecting the damn Undertaker. That's a cool one.
I mean, that's part of the entrance as well. Like, just Paul Bearer walking in front of him, just going, oh, yes! That's as much a visual as anything else, really.
God, such a fucking good entrance. Like, if people will allow it, I'll give it a 20. You know, that doesn't, it's not really fair, but still. I can't think of anybody who could get a 10 more so than The Undertaker. So
what this means now is no one else is allowed to get a 10, and if we have voted anyone for a 10, they're going to drop to a 9.
Yeah, it might have to be like a 9.9. Just be like, it's technically not a 10, but you know. Let's move over to behavior. And before I explain what the behavior things are, I want you to be on good behavior. And to do that, what you should do is hop on over to smartcutmoment.com and vote on the Sexiest Superstars tournament that's going on right now, because the men's and the women's brackets are up for round 3. They are going to be closing at some point Friday or Saturday. I'm not entirely sure. It kind of depends on if we have some kind of a tie like we did last week, where I'll try to keep it on a little bit longer. But you can vote on the Sweet 16 and try to knock it down who should be moving along on this bracket. Go ahead and do that while you can. So behavior is backstage professionalism and public relations. And these are always the two hardest to really assess, as well as to just kind of clarify the difference between them. I've never been able to figure out a more distinct way of doing this, and we might in the future, I don't know. But the way that I currently have it, at the very least, is backstage professionalism breaks down to their stuff behind the scenes that isn't, I guess, like outside of the realm of the pro wrestling business, where it's like, are they a locker room leader? Do they allow people to beat them, or are they like, you know, well, I don't want you to beat me, I'm not going to put anybody over? Do they hinder other people's careers? Do they get into the politics of pro wrestling and screw people over? Do they cause problems behind the scenes? Are they fighting with people all the time? That kind of thing, as far as professionalism. And public relations is more of the person themselves promoting the company on charities, talk shows. Do they cause problems that makes WWE look bad? Because if this is a breakdown, Superstar Scores is essentially trying to make the perfect sports entertainer. One aspect of that is, technically speaking, just the person as an employee. So, you know, somebody like an Alberto Del Rio, who is currently going through some kind of a trial for abuse, and you've got people who fail the wellness policy, and you've got people who badmouth the company, and you got people who do those kind of things. Those are bad, obviously. And then you got somebody like a John Cena, who's just pretty much like squeaky clean and is like the guy who's done more Make-A-Wish things than anybody else in the past, and he goes on lots of media tours, and he tries to promote the WWE brand and different things like that. Not as much anymore, but, you know. So I guess let's just kind of do a twofer here, because it's a lot of it kind of overlaps in some ways. I gave him a 10 for backstage professionalism, because pretty much nobody has anything bad about The Undertaker. He seems to be the guy that is the benchmark for well-respected in the industry. Like, the people that were in his clique, the BSK, they, of course, big Undertaker's fans, big Undertaker fans, people who were not friends of his, respect the hell out of him. Nobody seems to dislike Taker. And even the people that are more cynical and more, you know, screw the business, it's my past, but I don't care about it. It seems like if they ever talk about Undertaker, it's just like, oh yeah, Taker's the man and whatever. So he has been the locker room leader for so many different years, where he was the head of, or the judge of wrestlers' court, supposedly. And he's put people over. He's wrestled people he didn't want to. He lost to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania when he arguably could have put up more of a stink about it. He's lost to people who are bigger and smaller to him. I don't know any bad stories about Taker, so he gets a 10 for me on professionalism. Actually, you know what? Let's go around and stick with that then. Rob, what do you got for professionalism backstage?
For backstage, I got him at a 9. Just because, like you said, there's almost no bad stories about him, but I'm sure somewhere along the line he's been a dick to somebody, so I'm just going to knock off that one point, because really, otherwise I'd just be giving 10s across the board, because Undertaker is almost the model employee, but I did give him a 9 here.
Way go. You want to unmute your mic first? All right. Well, in the meantime, Callum.
Oh, okay. Standing in silence for a second there. But so for the backstage, it's hard, because I was trying to put in my mindset of, like, is Undertaker a model backstage professional for what WWE wants to see, or anybody else in any sort of professional environment want to work with? Because I think for the WWE environment, he's perfect in the sense that he commands respect. He was the head of the WWE court for the longest time. He'd go on the road constantly. You hear those stories about how he made sure Shawn Michaels would do the job to Steve Austin at WrestleMania 14. All of these other stuff, the way that he would make sure that people got their justice if they were not seen to be a model employee. So in that regard, he'd probably be a dick, but he's a dick that's respected. I kind of dropped the backstage side of it a little bit due to the stuff that was going on during the invasion stuff, which I don't know whether it came across, or it came across with the idea that he, as a MIFA WWE guy, seemed to be completely, but the idea of jobbing to any of the WCW guys seemed to feel beneath him, that was kind of his role as being like the guy that was with the company through and through all this tumultuous time, can't be seen doing a job to a DDP, is probably the prime example of that. So I'm going to stick with a 9 for now. Like, I was quite amazed, because I obviously did try and do my research into this to see if there is anything, and there's very, very few stories, considering the fact that he has been working on and off for 30 years. How little, like, backstage incidents and areas of tension there have actually been, besides that story about the Shawn Michaels thing, but Shawn Michaels was a dick, so he probably deserved it anyway.
I even like when this is a random story, but it's a testament to Undertaker standing up for other people too, whereas the whole Bret Hart thing with, I forget if it was Royal Rumble heading into that, or if it was right, like, before that or so, but there was the Diesel transition with Bret Hart and whatever like that, and Bret was kind of making a stink about not wanting to do certain moves, and, oh, this isn't going to make me look as good and whatever like that, and Undertaker just said, you know, motherfucker, not everything's about you, like, that kind of thing. Undertaker does seem to stand up for, like, even against the people who have pull and stuff like that, if it's kind of the right thing to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, that motherfucker, Not Everything Goes About You, is my favorite backstage story ever, just because it's so great.
Wago, what you got? 9, 9, 10. Still, so you around the same range?
I don't know if that story's true. I can't imagine Brett being upset about having to do something. But as far as backstage professionalism goes, I'm giving him an 8. I don't believe that you can exist in a backstage environment that's basically gang warfare and have a 9 or a 10.
Well, his gang in the gang warfare in 1998-99 was a bunch of cult people. So, I mean, they're kind of like their own little sect.
And two of them were Nazis, so you got to knock them down a peg for that too.
Well, public relations, I mentioned before, that's all the different things like the charities, talk shows, arrests, and all that other kind of stuff. That's easily the hardest, unless somebody makes a big stink about something, because it's like, well, did they do anything wrong? Okay, then deduct points. Did they not do anything wrong? I think then how do you judge really like talk shows and charities and stuff? And I can't give them a 10. Because he didn't do those things. You know, he wasn't going on these media tours the way that some other people were and everything. But that's because it was partially in character. So I kind of can't dock him a whole lot of points for that either, for them to want to keep the mystique. And I think it's something that's worth it to give him a higher mark than what it might seem. To keep in mind, yeah, he didn't go on talk shows like all the time. He did every once in a while, though. I mean, there was that footage of him at, like, Regis and Kathy or something like that. And he's done...
Awkward.
Yeah, it's really awkward, especially when he's, like, super into the, like, the dead man character. But he's done that in the past. He does do autograph signings and things like that. It's a lot easier when he's, like, more of just himself. But something that he's done that other people haven't done is he kept the character going and kept kayfabe for decades. You know, he'd go out in public wearing all black and acting like The Undertaker. And his personal life, I think that deserves a lot of commendation. So I currently have him at an 8. I don't feel like I should really bump him up to a 9 or a 10. I could be persuaded in that. But I feel like the amount of dedication that he has and the fact that he's not somebody who's been like, you know, oh, he got a DUI and this happened and he was accused of this, whatever like that. You can't dock points for that, you know. Being a person who doesn't have a bad image and does his job for the company throughout his whole life. Like, so he's got an 8 for me in that, but yeah, I can move up a little bit.
Yeah, I got him at a 10 because he had, like, when he was doing the earlier days, he was on Regis and Kathy a lot and he did do that kind of stuff. And even when he separated from Paul, he would go on media tours. Like, he was in Kuwait right next to Vader when Vader slapped up that guy for calling wrestling fake, and he completely, you know, kept his cool. And he was the model employee for WWE, to the point where when Brett was complaining and Sean was, you know, had lost his smile, they said, okay, well, we have to give the belt to Taker because he's the only person we can trust right now to represent our company. So I gave him a 10.
It's another difficult one because it's obviously so hard to determine with not knowing as much about him that maybe we probably should do, considering how long he's been around. In terms of research, the only things I could really find is that he once apparently dropped acid with Just Incredible. Huh. And that's,
who hasn't?
Yeah, no, exactly. And apparently stalked Jenna Jameson for a while.
Really?
And they, yeah, what? Well, there's that, there's a story that when, Jenna Jameson, after the, she was in WWE for a hot minute, and, they apparently kept in touch, maintained some sort of friendship, and then he went to one of her dancing shows. I don't know if that's the technical term for it, but I'll go with that phrase. And, apparently he made advances towards her and essentially threatened her boyfriend that he'd beat him up and take her himself, and so they just made a swift exit and never spoke to him again.
Wow.
Living the Taker gimmick a little bit literally.
But that's like the only things that I could potentially dig up that's considering 30-year career in one of the sleaziest businesses in the world, that's pretty low-key really. But I pushed him down to an 8 just in the mindset that I don't think, and I might be totally out of place with this, I don't think, from what I know about The Undertaker's character and what I've seen in sort of interviews he's given, that he does not fit into today's woke culture.
I was actually about to say that you're going to stick him out. Look, imagine if you ask The Undertaker to go out and do an interview and he just shows up in like a Blue Lives Matter shirt. Regardless of what you think about that, it's going to upset somebody.
I think he legit did that.
Yeah, that part of the fucking documentary is wearing a Blue Lives Matter shirt and he got a bunch of shit for it on Twitter.
I mean, wasn't one of these first interviews that he gave, like, not in character, was with some sort of fundamentalist Christian group,
I think so.
Like missionary thing? Yeah, it's just like that's the side that's like, okay, this is not gonna, he's not gonna fly in terms of, I mean, obviously if you put him in a documentary series like they've done recently with The Last Ride stuff, like you can frame it around and you can cut out the bits and pieces that you don't want him to especially be saying. And yeah, he's doing good stuff for the Tigers and all that other stuff that he's promoting with charity work. But I just don't, I think that if you were to put him in a character in like live microphone situations for too long, he would say something that immediately would cast dispersion on his character and yeah, immediately hurt his reputation.
Definitely. That's why I've got him at a 7, partially because one, the character that he has is just not good for talking, say on like, say a morning radio show or something. He's not going to do the rounds like The Miz. But then you've got that issue, like, where if you stick him on out there long enough, someone's going to go, so what do you think about the current climate with police brutality? And shit's going to go south quick.
not to try and, like, stereotype it, but he is a 55-year-old guy from Texas.
Yeah.
He has demonstrated that he does have some sort of inclinations towards a less than political correct view.
And he's a millionaire.
But, yeah, exactly.
I mean, just look at the politicians he follows. It's quite clear what he's into. I'm not going to hold it against him. He's entertained me for years, but as a PR guy, definitely not your number one person to put out there.
I mean, would you trust the guy to do PR that got his wife's name tattooed on his neck and then divorced that wife and had to get another tattoo over the top of it?
Well, I think it was Tori Wilson who said that Sarah was fucking batshit.
Would you trust the guy that married that?
Well, I mean, to be fair, he was like, I'd rather have Jenna Jameson. I don't blame him. Jenna Jameson and better looking. But yeah, public relations is always one of those weird ones. You know, it's either we call out these horrible things people have done, or we're like, oh, it's pretty boring. This person's like a 6 or an 8 or a 10 or whatever like that. And then it's like, sometimes you come across these things.
This is the first time where we've had to dox him on point because of what he might do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we know some of the people in the past. It's like, what else might do?
I'm just like tempering the waters until like a few years' time we have to revive this and it's down to a 3 or something because he said something out of turn.
Like some, when like older people get to where they just don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, kind of thing. Well, let's put it this way. He's probably going to revert to maybe being a backstage trainer in WWE one day. And do you think that his methods are probably going to go over well with some of the young wrestlers coming through? Do you think these things are probably going to be like Bill DeMott all over again?
Do you guys think he's going to end up doing that? How's he going to go, you know?
For the reason that Callum just mentioned, I don't think it's going to happen because it's a different business.
Well, yeah, I just think that he can't escape it. And it's proven over the past few years that he can't escape this job, and he'll want to hold on to it in whatever form he possibly can. I just don't see him just being an ambassador for the sake of being an ambassador. He has to have some sort of backstage role at some point.
I think he will wrestle until he cannot physically wrestle anymore, and at that point he won't be in a state to train anyone.
I kind of don't see him being the guy that would want to like move to Florida and be around the performance center all the time. Like, I didn't even think that Sean necessarily was going to do that, but Sean was a lot more believable for me because, you know, he's going to hang around with Hunter and he's going to be like, you know, I think it was him. It might've been Triple H that said like, you know, you get to like sap the youth from people and kind of bring it in for yourself and all that. And Undertaker's got a lot of powers and stuff, but I don't think that that's going to be the case. He strikes me more as the type that like, he might want to keep popping up here and there to do things at like WrestleMania or do like a signing at Access and stuff. But I don't think he's going to be actually like getting in there in the ring and showing people headlocks and stuff, you know?
If you'll pardon the comparison because of, you know, recent allegations and stuff, but I could see him being Triple H's version of a Pat Patterson, who's like just the finish guy everybody goes to, or he's a part of the creative team, but he also has free range to walk out the door whenever he wants.
You're sort of like a perpetual consultant.
Yeah.
I can see that. Well, the final two categories here are under the crowd reaction banner. They are popularity and credibility. Popularity is pretty self-explanatory. Do they get cheered? Do they get booed if they're a heel? Yeah, that's like the actual benchmark for a heel. It's not just like, oh, nobody likes this guy, and you know, he's like Ric Flair during the Four Horsemen or something like that. Do they sell merchandise? We don't know the full numbers, but you can kind of tell if somebody sells merchandise by the fact that there's a million Austin 316 shirts and there's really nobody that's holding up a sign that says that they really want a Flash Funk thing or something like that. The ratings when they're on screen, you know, do people tune in to watch that person when they end up being on the show? Twitter followers, Facebook followers, any kind of like factors that you can really bring in there for popularity. And credibility, I'll mention in a moment. We'll stick with popularity for now. But popularity, I'm going to go 10. I think that Undertaker has stood the test of time. He is beloved. He's been a character that people have perpetually just been like, yeah, I'll buy that shirt. And, you know, we'll get this kind of memorabilia and some different things like that. So, I mean, everybody loves Taker.
If The Rock is a 10, The Undertaker has to be a 9.
I could see that.
I would argue The Undertaker is more popular than The Rock, but...
Then you're wrong.
No. I'll take that. I don't know. Undertaker, he's the guy. Everybody knows The Undertaker. People who don't watch wrestling at all will still know who The Undertaker is, what a chokeslam is, you know, rest in peace, all that stuff, because Taker just transcends the average wrestling fan. I got him at a 10. I could be persuaded to move him down to a 9.
Here's my thing. The Rock is that level of popularity in wrestling, and he's that level of popularity in celebrity now. The dude could make a run at presidency and fucking win.
I'd vote for him. Couldn't say that for The Undertaker.
In this climate, I think Undertaker's probably more likely.
Yeah. Well, in this climate, he can choose his weather changing powers to maybe help out a little bit. Callum, what do you got?
I've got him at a 9 as well, just because when I think the 10s in wrestling, the thing about The Undertaker is that he's never been the top guy in WWE. He's been the guy that's there longest, but he never was like the main guy. But 10s are Austin, Rock, Cena, Hogan, Flair, people that were the star of the entire company. Whereas Undertaker's always been like the second guy. Like, I think I made the analogy a little while ago about the idea that Undertaker's always the second feud, second from the top of the card for such a long time, where the top match would be the title match, whoever was the champion, whoever was meant to be the title, the main attraction for the entire company. And Undertaker would fight the Monster of the Month, and that would be a fun attraction that would get a good reaction because Undertaker was popular. But he's not. He was never the super guy. I mean, I have people like we've previously done before. Like, I've got Shawn Michaels at a 9. I've got Triple H at a 9. I've got Goldberg at a 9. And they all seem to fit with me in the Undertaker side of things because they were never the ultimate star of the company.
You really have Austin at a 10, though? Like, that dude was a 10 for, like, a couple of years.
Yeah, but he was only around for a couple of years.
He didn't have Sting. Yeah, but your popularity continues. Like, Hulk Hogan used to be a 10, but you'd put him at a 9 now. Like, Austin, probably a 9 now.
Well, yeah, but that, in the same token, you'd probably say, well, The Rock has to be a 9 because he was Rocky Maivia, so.
Yeah, but The Rock keeps getting more popular. It's like, never ends.
I mean, I would still kind of just put those with the sense that we're not just obviously talking about the whole career, not just their peak, but I just get the sense that those ones are still going to be not so much remembered, but their hot streak was at a point where they were not a 10, they were a 20, and they were moving so much stuff that anything beyond that point, just it would take a lot for them to chip away at a 10 at that point.
I'd actually dare say more people know who Undertaker is than Austin now.
I think that is just due to I think that's due to longevity more than anything else. Not that it's a detriment, but it's just...
longevity makes popularity, though.
Well, look at The Simpsons. That doesn't exactly work in certain situations.
Yeah, they're still fucking pump printing money, though.
Mm.
don't know how.
He's definitely a big merchandise mover, which would definitely boost him up as well. I just think for that entire 30 years, there was always someone who was ahead of him in the pecking order. So I kind of just want to keep him at a 9 for that regard.
I could see that.
And you've almost convinced me to drop him to an 8 now.
In fact, he's a 3. Got all booger red. Gets the 3.
That would definitely get a 3.
Yeah. Credibility is their actual, like, kayfabe side of things. You know, are they a main eventer, a Hall of Famer, a legend type? Are they a jobber? It's, you know, do you believe that they will win any match, any title, that kind of thing? Are they a Brock who can just beat the living hell out of literally everybody, including even The Undertaker at times? Or are they a Nunzio or somebody who just, they get their ass whooped and that's all they do? Undertaker's a 10.
Yeah, he's a 10 for me.
He's the guy who can beat anybody. And even though he has lost to people, and he's lost to some people that it's like, oh, wow, that person's got to win over that.
Kozlov.
He's typically been somebody who is kind of untouchable in a lot of ways. And I mean, his unstoppable gimmick is like, you get like a great Khali type and it's like, this guy can run through the roster. And they literally say it in the 2007 Royal Rumble. It's like, who can stop him? Undertaker comes out. Okay, maybe there's one guy who can stop him because it's the Undertaker. Like, you know, he's a 10.
I agree.
In a world of strictly kayfabe, Brock Lesnar is the greatest wrestler of all time. The only guy, Undertaker's one of the few people that can beat him convincingly, so you have to put him as a 10 as well.
Yeah, I have, based on any sort of metric you want to put it against, whether it's the streak, like such a long unbeaten streak, the biggest wrestling show of the year of all time, and then you have number of world titles he's run, which is actually quite fewer than you'd probably expect considering how long he's been there. But like I say, that's just part of the thing of him not being the top guy for most of his time in the company. But then you've got the longevity, the Royal Rumble win. He's never been Intercontinental Champion, which might look him down to a 9 maybe. But
well, I've always considered that he's too good for the Intercontinental Championship.
I mean, the guy the big secret with Ted DiBiase, and then quickly beat Hulk Hogan for the world title.
Absolutely. That's insane. I would say that if he'd never fought for the Intercontinental Championship, which he has done, just never won it. But no, it's definitely a 10. There's few people on the roster that are more credible than The Undertaker has been throughout his career. So yeah, that's pretty self-explanatory.
So here are the final scores. I've tallied them up. The lowest that we have given him for anything is a 7. That's the lowest mark that anybody's given him for any part of any category. So that's telling right there that he's obviously a 70 or above for every single one of us. The one who has him at the lowest is Wago at 84.
Surprised, but honestly, looking at it, could be lower. So
then it is Callum at an 87.
Mm-hmm.
Then myself at a 92, and then Rob at a 93. So
no, I have him at a 92.
Oh, did you switch one of yours?
No.
I've got you down 8 for athleticism, 10 for psychology, 9 for charisma, 10 for character, 7 physique, 10 entrance, 9 backstage, 10 public relations, 10 popularity, 10 credibility, 93.
Oh, well then I did the math wrong. Okay, 93.
Yeah, so our average for the four of us is an 89, which is still the highest out of anybody that I have on mine, since my highest before was an 86 for Chris Jericho. But you figure my actual highest is a 92, and there you go. That's how that works. You know, we've gotten 25 other people at that point, and Undertaker is the leader right now. For myself and for Rob, and I'm pretty sure for Wago, but of course Wago didn't do some of the other ones in the past. And I think he is not the leader for Callum.
Triple H and Jericho still have him.
Yeah, they're at 89, so he is like your number 2, essentially.
Yeah, number 3. I'll still always be a log ahead between Jericho and Triple H, whichever one will be the top one for me.
Oh, they're tied.
So I'm the main judge.
Yeah.
I think that's appropriate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you are looking at a possible score of a 100 and we limited the entrance at a 10 and we all were kind of like, yeah, we'd potentially go plus at that point. If you allowed for that flexibility, Undertaker could potentially be a 100 score for me, but at the very least, there's a 92 and he's the highest and he's just shy of being an absolute perfect score. I don't think that there's anybody who can potentially get that good of a score. There is somebody who is close that we haven't done yet.
I think there's one guy that can get really close to 100.
I've done four other ones in the just to prep ahead of time that Hulk Hogan, John Cena, Steve Austin, and The Rock. One of those people is close, but at least right now, they're still not at the same regard. So,
I was talking about Gobbledygooker.
Well, come on, we don't need to do that. Obviously, it's 100. It's just anybody who comes out of an egg is over. It's pretty sure.
I don't know if we'd be talking about Eggman today if that had gone that way.
Well, then maybe that would be like some kind of a showdown thing before Eggman versus Gobbledygooker, and which one comes out with the comparisons.
If anyone ends up saying that we should have included Mean Mark Callis and his other gimmicks, then I guess he could be dropped a few more points, but I'm pretty happy with 84.
The way I look at superstar scores is I tend to judge mostly based off of WWE. So he never did that in WWE, so I'm willing to be like, that didn't happen. That's non-canon, you know, that kind of thing.
Man, yeah. I'd really love to shot at doing Hulk Hogan's PR and backstage professionalism. That'd be fun.
That's where things get a little bit dicey for Hulk Hogan, but that is something that we can do in the future. We've gotten lots of requests for some strange people here and there. So there's people that are high up, like the John Cenas and the whatevers and stuff. But there's also people that are like super low. It can be fun to do, I don't know, superstar scores, Barry Horowitz, or Duke the Dumpster Drosy, or something like that.
Glacier.
Yeah, like, I want to know your suggestions. You know, there's a wide variety of options here, and we don't do these all the time, but, you know, every once in a while, maybe two or three times a year or something like that, we get around to doing them. Unless, of course, you donate to the Patreon and you do the Pick Your Poison tier, then we will do more of them. That's why we did Edge, I think. So, yeah, 92 for me, average of an 89. We have a range of 84 to 93. So that's you can't get much better than that. Literally, there's only 7 more points that he could have gotten for one of us. So. Undertaker's awesome.
He's the best. I don't think there isn't a modern WWE without all the stuff the Undertaker's done.
I don't even know if there's a WWE at this point without the Undertaker during their bad time.
Yeah, he was such a backbone during that period of time where they just had no one else.
He's a total constant. He's like, he I don't say he mirrors the evolution of WWE, but he's the one thing that just blends these massive eras of WWE together.
Yeah, when he finally leaves, it'll be sad because it'll be the one thing that's finally gone, which I always had in pro wrestling.
Like when you talk about WWE, you talk about from the Hulk Hogan rock and roll wrestling era. Obviously, there was a WWE prior to that, but that's like the big boom period. And he's been there essentially from the tail end of that onwards, and been through all through the ups and downs of it. So yeah, it's going to be like a real break of history. Like there is like an Undertaker period of history that's just going to be gone at that point.
He really is one of the only people who's faced every face of the company during their peak,
including even Roman Reigns, oddly enough.
He got them all.
I mean, I hope that wasn't Roman's peak, because that would be...
He hasn't really proved it too much past that, you know. But if we talk about, like, hey, you know, how crazy is it going to be when, like, Vince McMahon eventually passes, and, like, that's going to be this, like, earth-shattering thing in the professional wrestling business and stuff like that. But think about when The Undertaker finally goes. Like,
just watch, they'll die on the same day.
It's just like
some creepy loyalty bond.
It's like what's the move in Pokemon?
I mean, that's the reason why they have such a strong
Destiny bond.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they have like such a strong bond together, because like really early on in Undertaker's career, Vince McMahon tied his life force to Undertaker. Yeah. So that's the reason why McMahon is like managing to stay so active even at like 77 or 78.
There's some kind of like
movie Dragonheart or some shit where he has half the dragon's heart.
Oh yeah.
Where you like sell the soul to the devil type of thing or something. Like, look, as long as you know, we can get past 1994 and 1995, like things will work out, you know, whatever, but I'm gonna have to sell my soul to this guy who takes souls and digs holes and all that other kind of stuff. But yeah, it'll be a dark day when Undertaker finally goes. But he is one of those guys that, as long as he doesn't do anything to mess it all up, he is going to go down in history as arguably like the most well-respected best of all time in so many different ways. And it's weird when you talk about Mount Rushmores and people tend to not put The Undertaker on there. But I've made this argument before when we were doing the Mount Rushmore Pro Wrestling. He is in this weird side kind of thing where I almost kind of go, okay, Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling is blah, 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 blah. And then you got to go, yeah, The Undertaker is like the Statue of Liberty or like the Lincoln Memorial or something like that, where it's just like, yeah, he has his own thing, you know?
It's a hard one because I think people would be pressed to like, it's hard not to say that Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan are a part of that Mount Rushmore. It's the first two that come to most people's minds. And then when you get that Rock Austin Undertaker territory, it gets weird.
So... that is our breakdown of The Undertaker's career as far as right now. Who knows if he comes back and wrestles anymore, if that ups him, if it makes him lose some points, I don't know. But if we do an adjustment in the future, adjustment is how you say that, not adjustment, then, you know, we'll address that down the line. But thumbs up as far as that goes. Tell us your thoughts again in the comments below. Tell us your scores and how did he range compared to what we did. And I guess I should just kind of toss around the baton here for plugs, because I did pretty much all my plugs. So, Callum?
You can follow me on Twitter at Wigmeister14. Check out all the articles at smartcatmoment.com, including the Power Rankings, which is my weekly contribution. But make sure you check out all the others while you're on there. Vote in the Sexy Superstar Tournament, all that other great stuff. And make sure that you're tuning in at the weekend for the next edition of the Paul Heyman podcast, where we go back to the time when Paul Heyman was writing for SmackDown in 2002. There'll be a lot of Undertaker on that as well, and I won't be so complimentary as I was on this edition. So hope you enjoy that one. Me and Rob Bird will be back with another edition on Saturday. So pass it on to Rob now.
Yeah, and if you want to keep up with everything else I'm doing, you can check out Fightful and WrestleZone and just continue to support Smart Cat Moment and the weekly articles and our great writing staff. Wega?
Wear a fucking mask.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Go ahead and check out everything that's happening on smartcatmoment.com at smartcatmoment.com. And check out the Fanboys Anonymous stuff, vote on the tournament, check out the merch shops, head up to Patreon, and stay tuned for everything else that's coming your way. The next thing that you're going to be hearing from us is going to be the Hot Tags of the Week, where we will talk about the United States Championship belt that they just brought out and whatever else needs to be put in the Hot Tags. And then you'll have the next Paul Heyman SmackDown, and then who knows what we do next week. I actually don't have, I think, a plan. Or actually, it's next week Extreme Rules.
Yes.
So that would make sense then. Extreme Rules predictions for the horror show at Extreme Rules.
Figure on that one.
God, I hate saying that so much. Especially since it just does not roll off the tongue.
Well, somebody's going to lose an eye, so you don't have to worry too much about tongues rolling off.
And then actually right now looking at the lineup, unless something changes, there are 4 weeks between July 22nd, 29th, August 5th, and August 12th that are up in the air. So if nothing crazy happens and they don't announce, you know, next bunch of pay-per-views or something like that, then we could get a wide variety of different kind of special features out there. So start throwing out your suggestions. You know, you don't want us to do the AEW roster tier list. Do you want us to do one more match Christian? Do you want us to do some kind of look ahead to SummerSlam, look back on SummerSlam, wrestling with the past, you know, whatever it is, fan announce table, so on and so forth. Keep that in mind. Extreme Rules predictions coming up next week, though, and then everything else you'll just find on smartcapmoment.com the way that you normally would find everything else. So, yeah, thank you for listening to this edition. Thank you for all your support in whatever fashion that it is, and we will see you next time, everybody. But for now, this has been another Smartcap Moment, and we're being counted out.